Okay, are we on?
Seven a month ago.
All right, let's get started. Let's call this meeting to order and we'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That was good, Ellen.
Look at you. I saw the blue and white star.
Yeah, it kind of looks like the.
It was a trick.
Ms. Miller, do we have an ethics thought for the day?
We do. We have two thoughts for the new year. One's from Oprah and the other's from Marie Curie. And Oprah's for the new year is, I want every day to be a fresh start on expanding what is possible. So I'm thinking of that for the commission, on expanding what is possible. And Marie Curie, I've never heard this quote before. Certain bodies become luminous when heated. Their luminosity disappears after some time, but the capacity of becoming luminous afresh through heat is restored to them by the action of a spark. And so I thought that was interesting, because sometimes, you know how you feel luminous and you're like really inspired, and then other times you kind of lose your luminosity and you kind of like fade a little bit. But it takes a spark to kind of ignite that again and get people luminous. And so I'm hoping for a year filled with luminosity.
We should get a little card so that after your ethics comments we can judge it.
Do you like the intellectual aspect of that one, George?
I think I've said enough.
Has anyone a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll second that.
I'd like to discussion first. If you could, I'd like to defer on these. I did have just a couple of thoughts. For example, on the election of officers, we had voted to waive the internal operating procedure that requires that to be done ahead of time. So I just had a couple of thoughts maybe I'd like to incorporate. Mm-hmm. If we can defer that until the next meeting, if Ms. Barnett would draw from
there. Sure, I'll withdraw my motion.
Okay. No problem. Echo office, do we have a report?
Two things. I'm real excited. I sent you an email about the conference I'm going to in a couple weeks, Unrig the System in New Orleans. It has a few thousand people coming from all over the country to talk about creative ways to improve the political structure that we've got in the country today, with PACs essentially running all of our elections at the national and state level, and more so now increasingly at the local level. So I'm looking forward to hearing some of the best experts in the country talk about that. I'll be speaking on what to do at the local level, so I'm excited about that. I'll probably send you some little videos coming out from the conference. They produce wonderful videos. One of them is one that I think George might be familiar with. It's interesting. It comes from a Princeton study, and I want to get the actual study and send it out to everybody that the video is based upon, and then you can see how you take an academic study of 30 pages long, and how do you translate that to where people under the age of 30 are interested in the concept. And they talk about the research looked at more than 20 years' worth of data to answer a simple question: does the government represent the people? And they took data from nearly 2,000 public opinion surveys and compared it to policies that ended up becoming law. Like, what did the people want? What did the law actually end up being? And in other words, whether or not people being interested in an issue and being supportive and lobbying for it made any difference. And they found that the opinions of 90% of Americans have essentially no impact at all on the policy nationwide. And the 10% of the people that do have an impact are the ones that are, of course, high campaign funders and the emphasis of money in the system right now. So the video, I think, is really interesting. The underlying study I had heard about a couple of years ago. So I'll send that to you so you can chew on it. And so Unrig the System will be a very interesting seminar, and maybe I'll send some emails from the conference. If anything exciting happens, I'll send little photos. The second thing is just a little training snippet on the Sunshine Law. If you recall, I sent out something on training to everyone in the commission, and one of the commission members sent back something saying, well, I think it's a good idea, and what if we do this or that, or what if we, you know, and I sent something back on the Sunshine Law. And the reason I did that is I wanted to just, I guess from like a compassion is the word that comes to mind, but with the Sunshine Law and with what happens with city council people all the time is you get an issue and everybody gets really busy and excited about something, and then someone does something that we ordinarily always do, like responding to an email saying, yeah, good idea, why don't we do X, Y, and Z, which, you know, like is your instinct wrong. And so sometimes the things that we automatically think of as being the next thing to do get on that edge of the Sunshine Law. So could we make a mistake in the commission? Yes. Could people in city council? Yes. Are there like 100 variations of that? Yes. So I just wanted you to get a feel for how hard that is. We at times have actually, you know, I sent something out saying, how many people are in favor of us doing such and such? And I remember one time I sent that out to all the members of the commission. I got something back from general counsel at the time saying, you're really close to violating the Sunshine Law. And I just wanted to know if people were in favor. No, you can't do that kind of thing. So anyhow, just be really sensitive, I think, to any kind of communications. But I just think it's a really hard thing to be 100% perfect. And that's why I have compassion for the city council people on some of these issues, because these are really nuanced things. If lawyers can make mistakes with it, then all of us, you know, have to really be on our toes. Anyhow, I just mentioned that too as a little train snippet. And that's all I have.
General counsel?
I don't really have a report, but just to continue on the training, we did the CPAC training last week.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was good. That was, you know, the community is divided up into different CPACs and different citizens. What is the stand for?
Citizens Planning and Advisory Committees.
And, you know, all of them, like North Side and South Side and Beaches, all have citizen groups. And Cherry and Kirby and I went last week and trained all the chairman and vice chairman of all of those groups in the city so that they can get out ethics information to all the CPACs. Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that.
And they submitted evaluations, and they were very positive.
And we did outreach to the Greater Arlington and Beaches CPAC.
Kirby did that, yep.
For the Ethics Commission.
That was good.
From the Ethics Office last Monday.
Yeah, that's just in the first 2 weeks of the year.
Mm-hmm. We've been busy.
Rousing start here.
Okay, so moving on to new business. Before the meeting today, we circulated a list of subcommittee assignments. I don't know if it's titled proposed or not, but certainly if anyone has any input on our best efforts to kind of comply with what folks said they'd be interested in and fill need, certainly now would be a good time to talk about it. If there are any questions or concerns or comments.
I got exactly what I was hoping for.
And one's happy.
I'm happy.
The only thought I had, Mr. Chairman, is that, and I just didn't look back to check, I'm pretty confident that under the new complaints rules, serving on the hearing panel before a complaint ever gets to the hearing panel does not disqualify somebody from going back to the complaints committee. Does that make sense? And is that correct from knowledge of others?
Well, I thought we had did away with the hearing committee for the complaints. It's just the complaints committee. So there's no hearing committee because the hearing is before the full commission.
No, the hearing would be before the hearing panel or hearing officer.
Or hearing officer,
right.
Okay.
And then the full a final affirmative finding a violation would go to the full commission.
Right.
Okay.
But as far as the case management post probable cause, that's handled by the hearing panel.
Okay. But I thought there was no hearing panel anymore.
There is.
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
Okay.
So it didn't really solve your inquiry.
It did not solve my inquiry, but I should have known the answer to my inquiry anyway.
So Joe, can you repeat that again? I'm sorry, I was trying to think through that.
So the question is, if somebody, let's say that we had a complaint pending last year, and somebody was not on the complaints committee, right? Which means that they would be on the hearing panel if that complaint went to a hearing panel.
Right.
Is that person then precluded from being on the complaints committee now? And I think not. I think it was only the other way, that you can't be on the complaints committee and then serve on the hearing panel.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That was my memory.
We can take a look at that in light of a switching. Yeah, so we didn't consider that like in all cases, like when you go through to the next year and then people switch committees. Otherwise, if you get on the complaints committee, you have to stay on it for the entire time you're on the commission.
That's
because you keep having overlapping issues.
Well, the reason we reduced it to three members, to only a requirement of three members, was to cover that. So the hearing panel has to be comprised of at least three members of the commission who did not participate in or attend any executive session for the complaint. And so what that would mean is Mr. All, for example, could not, and Mr. Hartley, could not serve on the hearing panel for a complaint that were under consideration last year, because both of them were on the complaints committee.
But shouldn't that be handled? I mean, it makes sense that on a case-by-case basis that would still hold true.
That's right.
But there shouldn't be overlap, because now that there's a new assignment, new complaints would come in, and then the rules would apply as to that complaint.
That's right.
So I don't see a conflict.
There's not. And what I was asking, which I just answered my question while I was reading, that requirement does not apply in the opposite. So Ms. Allen can serve on the complaints committee this year.
I would think so, because it would be a case-by-case analysis.
Right. You just can't serve on a hearing panel this year for a complaint that were under consideration last year.
Correct. I agree with that.
And there won't be too many in that category that just slide between the 2 years.
That's right. Yeah. All right. I answered my own question.
It's always helpful.
Sorry for...
We're glad you were here.
Thank you all for going through that intriguing analysis with me.
That was good, Evan. That was good.
Any other comments or questions regarding the committee assignments? Okay. Hearing none. The next area of new business is the Ethics Commission Strategic Plan for 2018.
We have a vote for the leadership?
In December. November?
No, we had it in September.
September?
Last year.
Okay, so Brian and John were voted?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, just making sure.
Yeah. It was October,
that's
right?
When we waived the internal operating procedure to do it in advance of whatever the timeline is of internal operating procedures.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We just knew who should be our leader.
So, this being the first meeting of the year, I guess it is a perfect time to talk about strategic plan.
Mm-hmm.
We have a draft form from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have a copy of that?
Yeah, it's in the materials, and the strategic goals were worked on early last spring, and sometimes, we've done this a few years, but if you kind of like keep working on them like the whole first part of the year, then you only have like a little time left at the end of the year to actually implement them. So we were hoping to get them out for this meeting, and if you take a look at your package, we've got like what everybody was thinking about last year, but we had some membership issues and some things that kind of pulled us in different directions, so we didn't really get to be as focused as we have been in other years. So what you'll see in your package is the strategic goals, and it actually goes per committee, open government, legislative, and what we wanted to accomplish for the year. This needs to really be revised in the committees. Like each committee needs to kind of get together in the next month and really think with what were you thinking of doing last year? Is that worthwhile? What do you want to do for the new year? and then update this plan. It might be looking pretty much like 80% of what's here, or it could be completely different. It's up to all the subcommittees to kind of shape it up.
And the full commission as well.
Yeah, because it comes back to the full commission and then up for discussion.
And I think it's at least worth mentioning, too, a lot of the goals that are a part of this strategic goals plan were such that they couldn't be completed in 1 year's time. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage various committee members, when they're reviewing these goals and amending them as necessary, to consider any progress that have been made towards the goals and you know, at least think twice before abandoning some of the ones that had previously been set, although obviously each committee can do that if they so choose. Certainly with legislative, there's a lot of work that we had made a part of this plan that is in progress, but unfortunately not as far along as I would have preferred. But that's just an example. I think a lot of these goals certainly do take some time, and just I would appreciate that consideration.
And we're not limited to this. I mean, if anybody has any bright idea that you want to, in fact, if you see that you're on a committee and you have a bright idea for another committee, please, get it to us so that we can circulate the bright ideas. You are not limited just to thinking with your committee. You know, you can be wild and have ideas for all the committees, and to also go to other committee. If you see something noticed on an issue with it, like legislative, Brian's put in years of work on some of the legislative revisions. If you see the meeting is noticed on a particular law that they're working on and you are dying to participate in that, don't say, oh, I can't go because I'm not on the legislative committee. Just, we need everybody's input on it. So feel free to pop in at extra meetings.
That's something that Carla and I discussed, too, with respect to chair and vice chair not being on these committees. And it's sort of a work in progress. We suggested that perhaps meetings could be attended by members that weren't on the committee, but then that kind of might not work in practical form if there's a contentious issue. Obviously, the committee members would need to vote on it. But in theory, it seemed like it might be productive. I don't know if any of you have any thoughts on that or opposition to it. But we were kind of torn between the idea of membership and also then what roles could be taken outside of actual membership. And that's kind of what we arrived at. But it's certainly something that worthy of discussion if someone has any good input or thoughts on it. And if
you're talking about attendance at other committees?
And participation, although obviously not in a voting capacity.
How does that work on council?
So attendance.
If a council member shows up to another committee, do they sit behind
them? Yeah, they do. They sit at the dais, and they mark them like as a visitor, especially if they have a bill that they're not on a committee, and they'll go and lobby for that, quote-unquote, lobby for that bill. So.
And can they formally participate in the discussion?
They cannot vote, though. No.
They can. Yes, they participate in the discussion. They just can't vote.
Okay.
And they do participate in the discussion.
So when they have, like, a motion and a second, when it's open for discussion, even a non-committee member can speak?
No. Not on the...
So they're just like a member of the public?
Yeah, they're sort of like... But they're speaking, giving their opinions and trying to lobby for their vote there. But they don't participate when there's a motion. I don't recall that.
Yeah, they do. But they say, I'm not a voting member here.
Right.
I can't vote on this.
Oh, okay.
But if I were a voting member, I would do blah, blah.
Oh,
And so they do participate. And the president of city council and the vice president of city council will come down. If the city council president or chair is interested, they will come to a particular subcommittee meeting and they'll speak as president. But they don't get to vote.
Right.
But if there's a vacancy, that's it's interesting. Like, let's say you three were on the complaint committee, but one person was going to be out for a period of time ill. Mm-hmm. The chair can put someone in on a temporary basis, you know, and that person can vote. So I've seen vacancies in city council in the afternoon, and it's a really contentious vote. There was one with the ethics, the independence of the ethics commission. I remember it well. And it was very important who was going to sit there and whether they supported the ethics, what we wanted to do with the independence of the ethics commission. And there was a vacancy. Someone got sick, and I was yes. There is a God. And then the city council president put in someone that I knew was in favor of the ethics code. And so there's a lot of interesting maneuvering along those lines with the city council.
Hmm. Well, I would, well, as a relatively new person, I would welcome the opportunity to attend any of the committee meetings and learn more.
Not all of them. I mean, if you notice, if you're a chair and you notice a meeting, you have to put in kind of like some of the substance of what you'll be going over. If it's just like we're meeting and we don't know what we're really going to be getting into, but I'm sure it'll be interesting. No one will come. If you say, we're looking into whether attorneys should serve on boards of the city and pull that apart, we would probably get like 20 people that would want to come to that, even past members of the Ethics mm-hmm. Commission. So if you put a little bit more in your notice, you're likely to get, you know, drag people into the discussion that really are interested, including citizens mm-hmm. who can always, you know, throw their 2 cents in too.
And while we're together as a group, I know we're going to meet in our committees and chew on the strategic plan, but kind of jumping off of what we were working towards last year, is there any discussion or input that we can do as a whole prior to those meetings regarding the strategic plan that might be beneficial, particularly in a situation where you've left a committee and there are new members in there and you might want to communicate some motivation or interest or discussion as to what your plan or goal was in the prior year maybe some suggestion as to what should stay or go on the strategic plan, or are we premature on that?
Not so sure why it can't be discussed in the first committee meetings.
And I just meant maybe for folks that aren't in the same committee now, if they've moved or shuffled at all, if there was something that they wanted to suggest or pass along. Mm. I mean, certainly with respect to legislative and working on rewriting the code, I mean, I strongly encourage that to maintain that goal and to keep that proceeding. And while we did articulate a segregation of responsibility with respect to folks volunteering to evaluate the kind of new nationwide code and see its application as to the provisions for our community, even so, even with that division of labor, it wasn't focused enough to get it all done simultaneously. There really needs to be kind of a focus on one at a time, and that's something that certainly I would encourage folks that are on that committee to continue and to look at. But that was just legislative. I didn't know if anybody had anything from any of the other committees that thought that's a global basis would be important to talk about, but you're right. Probably all of that can still be handled in the first meeting.
I do think it's important to realize that this is we're all very busy. We have other things that we're doing, and we meet sporadically, and we need to be realistic. You know, quite frankly, a goal that a committee thinks they can achieve in the course of a year is better than zero, and it's better than eight things, than none of which get done. So
absolutely.
These things can be narrowed down to one or two. There's a lot to be said for that.
I concur, and that was exactly the experience that we had with trying to orchestrate a global restructuring of the code. But hey, if you take this section or a section, like Mr. Rogan did and did a great job with, it gets done. So, good point.
It's true, and Kirby and I stand by to support his staff because it's really hard. When we did the ethics code in 1999 and the Ethics Commission put it together, we met for 2 years because we'd meet every month, sometimes twice a month, and then we'd forget what we had done the month before, and then, you know, we'd bring in new people, and I thought, we are never going to get this thing done. And it's better if you just lock yourself in a room and, you know, you have people that are on staff and someone from OGC, and we don't leave the room until we have something to hand to you on a silver platter, really. You know, I mean, that's the best way, because it's very time-consuming. Although there's some things that any one of you could just sit down and really kind of think through. I like that the one thing on attorneys serving on boards that we actually didn't write last year, because we discussed, you know, we actually had a case on that, and so now we have like a real live scenario, and that makes it easier to kind mm-hmm. of think with how it should be. And we have one on, we have some examples now that, you know, make it real, and I think that's going to help us get to where we need to go on the legislative. I think this is the year, Brian, that it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Also, in the past, and it's been at least 3 years, because it hasn't happened since I've been here, the Ethics Commission itself has had a special meeting devoted only to strategic planning mm-hmm. for that immediate year and some longer-term goals for the commission itself. So if you would want input from other people that may not be on those current committees, that's also an option.
We had talked about, we had a professional person come in several years ago and lead us in a strategic planning session. And it was really interesting. We had a flip chart. That means a professional was in here with us. And they put down all of our ideas, and it was in this room. Mm-hmm. And we learned a lot, and a lot of what you see in front of you emanated from that meeting. And we always thought that every 3 years we should get together, have good food, and think, and you know, really try to get a vision. And like George said, we can have a great vision and just pick one thing that come hell or high water we're going to get done that year. Like for about 3 years, we had the independence of the Ethics Commission as our sole goal in life. We had nothing else. We just kept going to meetings and working on that, and that got done. So if you pick the right vision and goal, then it, even if it's one thing, if you're scattered all over the place trying to do 50 different things, then everybody gets discouraged. So one big thing that really can have an impact is always going to be the winning thing.
I certainly concur with that. I think there is a little bit of scattershot in the current plan, if I'm mm-hmm. being completely candid.
Yeah.
How in the past, you said you've orchestrated a specific meeting for that to kind of narrow the issue and see if there's consensus amongst all the commissioners mm-hmm. as to the priority of goals. How does everyone feel about doing that?
I feel good about that. I've done that in other groups that I've worked on, and it's been helpful for focusing.
Yeah, so, I could get a flip chart.
So are you proposing something that's a little bit, I mean, this is still a notice meeting, right? So it's
not, Yeah.
So we'll just bring a sandwich, something like that?
Yeah, or we deliver sandwiches or something, and, you know, we just have a little bit longer time to think outside of the box and to kind of talk about what we've done in the past, what's been successful, and everybody's gut feeling on some topics that we could get into, and we could have some speakers come to that. Most of the independent authorities, I know because they usually say, oh, we need to have a slot for ethics, most of them will have independent meetings. Like JTA had 2 days of board meetings, 2 days, but at One Ocean at the beach with great catered food. We don't have a budget for that, but it was 2 days of really kind of understanding the mission and thinking with where they wanted to go. A lot of groups will devote a couple of hours to that. We have put in here one time in the internal ops that every 3 years, we didn't want to do that every year, but we thought like every 3 years or so be time, especially now that we have our full membership contingent. Mm-hmm. You know, last year would not have been a good year to do that because we were in a state of flux all the time with members. Now we've got a great group, and people are all confirmed, and we're ready to rock and roll. It seems like this would be a good year to do that.
Well, I agree with that as well. I don't know about speakers, though. What
topic? On if we needed input on particular topics to consider. I mean, we don't need them. Maybe there'd be a need for it.
So what I'm envisioning then is the committee's meeting to narrow their own focus and figure out something that one goal perhaps
is
important to those committees. And then perhaps having a short group session where we decide amongst those individual goals, is there one that preempts them that the commission should tackle as a whole and focus on?
Yeah, one or two, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess chronologically speaking, we would need to have the committee meetings, and then will we need to reconvene as a group before we just, so perhaps our next meeting we should
like in March, like you could have committee meetings, kind of really think with it in February, get inspired, mm-hmm. and then March, we could have like a 2-3 hour meeting connected with food and a nice setting, open to the public, of course. Where, you know, we could have just more of a relaxed, free-flowing discussion as to, you know, what is emanating from the group. Because with 9 people and the level of expertise that everybody has, if we can't come up with, like, a vision to shift things, and I'll be sending you stuff from the Unrig the System conference in New Orleans and videos and things like that, and something should gel from that, I would think.
I like the suggestion. Any other input on it? Anybody?
We talked in October about doing that as a working lunch, didn't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, no lobbyist has stepped up to support the Ethics Commission in feeding us, so we may just collect $10 or, you know, $15 from everybody to support the food, sadly.
But just procedurally, will it be here? In City Hall? Or
could be. It could be wherever you want it to be. I mean, we could have it at UNF. A lot of the things like this are held out at the University Center at UNF. Sometimes getting out of the routine space is helpful. It has to be accessible, easy for the public to get to. And you think UNF would host us for something like that? Like your department, we'll come over and...
Well, we've got probably the worst conference room on the campus in our department, but our department could do it.
Yeah.
We could do it ourselves, of course. You know, any public group can contact the university and ask to use a space.
Depends on if you want to come here. This is centrally located, but we come here all the time, you know. So sometimes I think when you move the location, especially a really nice location, that one of the best... departmental ethics officer meetings we had was about 15 years ago, and I got Marshland and Country Club to sponsor it and to put the whole thing together, and it was really a nice event, and people, we hung out all day and we really had like a relaxed, nice discussion. I would not do that again at a country club. It's probably inappropriate, but you know, it's a nice place. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could get a room where it was a little bit out of the ordinary, because I think that breaks us from the pattern of another meeting and going through the ethics thought and the, you know, the typical things we do. You're breaking the pattern a little bit, which might help.
Your office just find a place and let us know, and we can, once we have a date, I think as long as the date works, I think we're probably all fine.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And if anybody has some good places that you know, Baptist might have some places.
Mm-hmm.
That would be different setting. Could do it on a law firm. I mean, so think of places where it would be conducive to us thinking outside of the box and interacting. And we'll work on that next month.
Okay. Great. Any other input on the strategic plan? We've beaten that horse. Okay, it says chair's announcement.
Yeah, that is to give out, since Ioana is not here, we can talk about her, but it's to give her a certificate as chair last year, and so we're not going to do that now.
Okay.
Yeah, since she's not here.
All right, we'll pass on lauding her.
Okay. Birthday week absence? Hmm? Is it birthday week absence? Is that what it is? Was it her birthday?
Oh, no, it's for outgoing as chair.
No, I got it. This is her birthday week. Yeah, she's out for her birthday.
Oh, no. She's sick.
Oh,
and
man.
Actually asked us to send her regards. So,
so we're going to
take a look at the new hotel.
It's all good.
She's at the door. Sorry. Okay, so 2018 meeting dates. I guess we all have our calendars. Mm-hmm. Do we want to pick
for
all
March,
of them?
For March, or I think it'd be hard to do the committees now, do you think? Because we have a couple members missing, so we'll do
I think it would be ideal to schedule for the year when we have everyone here.
Yeah.
So I guess we do need to pick a date for our next meeting, though. Or do you want to do that via correspondence?
We can. I think it's going to be hard. Whatever we pick, the other people who are not here probably will have. It might be better for email.
Okay. Just don't reply to all.
Yes, don't reply to all.
Exactly.
Reply to us. Yeah, so we're looking for a date in March for our strategic planning session. And then the subcommittee is all meeting in February. Is that what you want us to set up? We'll send out some emails in the next day or two and kind of get a feel for some good days here.
Yes, and I guess depending on the venue that we end up on, that may dictate what day we need to go to. Okay. Potential issues for analysis. I'm not sure what that means. Carla.
That's just something I wanted to throw out. Potential issues to dig into, and these are not on our strategic plan right now. They have been discussed over the years, some of them, some not, but there's two that I just want to throw out because I've been sending little snippets, emails on it. One is the influence of political action committees on our local politics. As you know, most of our elected officials now have political action committees that are set up based upon the state rules on this and the national law on it from Citizens United, mm-hmm. which is you can throw in like millions into a PAC and they can do certain things under election laws, but it runs contrary sometimes to the ethics laws. Mm-hmm. So we have a scenario where we worry on our ethics code about a lobbyist giving a gift to one of our elected officials of $100, like $150, or a Jaguar ticket. Oh my God, it's $200 and a lobbyist gave it. But that same lobbyist could put $50,000 into that elected official's campaign account, no restrictions on that. And then the elected official has the money to go to the games, to eat whatever he wants to eat, to, you know, fly wherever he wants to fly. That's the status of government these days, which means that the people that have the money to put in 20, 40, 50,000 into political action committees get to call all the shots. So I think it's an interesting ethics issue. It's something we can think with because at the national level, Congress has discussed this, and they immediately become very partisan on it and get into a gridlock, and nothing gets done. For years they've discussed. They know that basically if you've got the money, you buy your votes. That goes totally outside of all of our lobbying and gift laws. Mm-hmm. Why bother having our lobbying and gift laws? Truly, I mean, I want to do something. I don't know about all of you, and I can assume for all of you that you want to do something that's useful. And if we're like all up in arms because someone got a $150 gift, when you can completely circumvent all of these rules with political action committees, I think that that bears some thinking. I don't know what the solution is because they haven't thought of it at the national level and they haven't thought of it at the state level. But the only hope I think that we have to reverse what's going on is at the local level. that is where we can create something and actually have it go into place. And so that's one thing that I thought we could chew on a little bit and see if we can. I don't think we can prohibit what's going on. I think we can put in laws that make it more transparent for citizens and for voters. Because the Supreme Court has not said that we can't demand more transparency.
Right.
All they've said is that money is a free-for-all these days. So if we can think along those lines, I think it would give us not only an issue for our commission and for our city, but for the country. I'd like to see us come up with something creative, and I know that this group of nine that we've got now could do it. So that's one issue. The other is we're having all of our elections in the spring of 2019. Half of the people that are running for the offices, you can already tell who have been picked to be the winners and who already have the PACs and who already have $80,000 to $100,000 in their PACs to win their elections. Is there something we can do with our local elections for spring of 2019 in this particular area to give the voters more transparency in the money lines that are going mm-hmm. on in our city right now? Truly, our city is one of the first in the country that have taken Citizens United that's going on at the national level and at the state level and brought it down to the local level. We are the first, one of the first major cities to really play with this. We should be one of the first cities to try to do something to nip it. Otherwise, 10 to 15 years from now, the study I'm going to send you, the Princeton study and the video about what Americans think, what they want, it gets basically neglected at the policy level. We don't get what citizens want. Can we reverse that now? We may have a little chance to do that at the local level. But we could miss that opportunity. So I'd like to take a look at, like, is there anything that we could do for the spring elections? And I had a conversation with the mayor's chief of staff, Brian Hughes. Interesting conversation because he's run so many campaigns. And he said there's things that could be done. There's some things going on with elections that we need to have local laws on. And I said, great, you're in a good position to tell me what those are. So could we take some of those things, not to get a lot of picky, silly little things that we would enforce, but can we do something for the elections in the spring of 2019? And if we do want to do that, we have to be fast and get some laws on the books within the next 3 to 5 months, I would think. Anyhow, I throw those ideas out to you because I think that they could really impact what happens from an ethics standpoint. I want to see that we're hitting at the right targets, that we're not worried about someone in this building who works for the city getting a $150 gift basket from a vendor when there's so much money going in so many other directions that really impacts policy, and we have no control over that at all. None, zip. So it really makes our ethics laws ineffectual. I almost thought of the idea of just like sponsoring, proposing a bill eliminating parts of the ethics code because they're completely useless in light of all of the election laws. Really, I mean, what's the point? You know, we're busy over here, like, enforcing small laws when the, you know, it does not make sense to me. So anyhow, I want to throw that out. I'll send you some videos and see if the group is inspired to take some action along those lines, because I think it needs to be done.
What about a copy of the current rules as they stand that would be serve as a backdrop for what we would need to address? Can
right.
Forward those?
The political ones?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they used to be in the ethics code. It's now Chapter 350. And they were done in 1996 when John Delaney became mayor, and they haven't changed since. They were good at the time. One of them is you can't ask for money when you have a uniform on, a city uniform, because we had police officers in fire department, city, you know, going up to someone saying, you want to contribute to the mayor's campaign in their uniform, you know, so that was, okay, now you can't do it with your uniform, but can you do it with the city badge? Well, you know, that's not a uniform, You know, so there's ways you can't, like it used to be you could collect money in City Hall. You know, so you'd have like people in the hallway, you know, getting campaign check. Now you cannot take any money in a city building. You know, you can't take any political money. You know, so the people that are really involved in this know where the abuses are. We don't, you know, because we don't, unless any of you have run campaigns, but I want to know, like, what we can do to make it a level playing field. I don't really care who wins one way or the other. I care, and the ethics standpoint would be we want a level playing field. Mm-hmm. We don't want someone to come in and buy the race. We don't want someone to win it because of unfair advertising. We want the level playing field. That's what we should fight for the Ethics Commission.
What do you mean by level playing field if you're including as part of the level the resources that an individual has to put forth to the election?
Well, you'll never have level finances. You know, you'll always have one person that raises more money than the other.
Right.
I guess it's if one person raises $100,000 and one raises $500,000, you want to have a level playing field that at least the people that are supporting that person and putting the money into their campaign are disclosed as to who that person is and what their connection is. And so you see, like, oh, this is the business candidate, clearly, or, you know, this is the environmental candidate, but there's dark money in the political action committees, and that's where the problem is.
Yeah. Why wouldn't it be solved? You know, we're not going to be able to control how much money people are giving, but it seems like if you're going to vote on something, you could say, hey, somebody who gave to my PAC over $5,000, whatever the amount of money is.
Good idea.
Has a possible impact from this. To where the disclosure's there, and that's it.
Good idea, because what you're talking about has been tried out in San Francisco, and I think New York has done something along those lines. And what it is like when you either go for a contract or you bid a city council bill or something like that, there's a threshold where you have to say whether that person has donated to your campaign or your PAC. Mm-hmm. It's just a disclosure. Doesn't say they can't put $100,000 into your PAC. It just says that if you do that and then you ask for a vote the next week, that someone has to stand up and say, oh, God, by the way, didn't influence me at all, but $100,000 went into my account last week. You know, so at least we have some disclosure that you would hope that people would be able to put that on the table. Now if there's a conflict or a voting conflict, this is kind of interesting. You know, like you're sitting there as a city council person and you know you get like a special private gain from that legislation. You can participate in the discussion. You can't vote. You declare a conflict. After the fact, you have like a certain period of time after the city council meeting to declare what your conflict is. Yeah, really? So you're yapping away, talking in support of something, and then like 10 days later, you file a conflict of interest form. And I'm thinking, well, what good does that do? We could change that at the local level. We could change what people disclose. So, and that's the level playing field that I'm talking about. At least, you know, you're not saying...
Less unlevel playing field, perhaps, but...
It's not as level as you really want it, but money will always have an influence like that. But at least if someone's spouse is getting a $50,000 contract as part of this deal, people will take what you say with a grain of salt if they know it ahead of time. Mm-hmm. If it's a stupid written document 10 days later, you know, who? So I think there's so many areas, and what you hit upon is the disclosure at certain levels is something that could be worked with and massaged a little.
I'm not suggesting that's my position. I don't want to research it and look into it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying that, you know, it seems like not that complicated a solution.
There are ways that you don't inhibit anything that's going on. You just give people more information because there's more transparency. And if we can hit that level and bring in people that are intimately concerned with it and say, hey, what do you think of this? Is this, like, going to impede anything? or is this just information you really would prefer not to get out? Anyhow, so it's in an area that we could play with.
Is that something to refer to legislative to consider next month about how and whether to include that in their plan?
Yeah, I mean,
certainly.
Yeah.
Could you get some initial thoughts?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And any resources we can get them. We can get people that do know about this here locally. I've talked to some of them already.
So in your discussion professionally on this issue, is the counterpoint simply it's harder to raise money when people are held accountable by acknowledging who they're giving to? I mean, is that the counterpoint? Or what would someone who was in opposition to this disclosure come into our meeting and advocate for?
There's an advantage to having corporations that want to get a contract over here. You want a contract over here. You don't really want to have ABC company be shown to be supporting the person that can vote on this. So if ABC company gives it to this PAC, and then this PAC gives it to this PAC, you can do like this little circuitous route, and then eventually this person gets $50,000 in their account. But there's no record for the public on ABC company being involved at all. And if you're ABC company and you want to come in and have something significant happen with this city, there's money behind it. Believe me, there is. You know, and it is best, I think, from the company's standpoint, to not have that be really out in the open. I just think that they think that, I mean, I there's lots written on it. All I can say is that there's an interesting series of articles on the Prince of Dark Money in Florida. And it's an accountant who puts together all the PACs and all of the interrelationships between the PACs, that this PAC gives money to this PAC, gives money to this PAC, then they turn around and support this person. You know, there's like this shell game. Mm-hmm. It's the best way I can describe it. And it's a very sophisticated system that's being put in place, and there are no rules on that game.
So there is a rule as to initial disclosure when the money is given from the company to the first PAC.
To the first one, yeah.
So that's why there's this
shell game. Yeah. So you'll see PAC 1 giving money to PAC 2, giving money to PAC 3, and you'll see it here in local politics. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's just the beginnings of that here in Duval County. So it's either an issue that you care about and you think is significant enough to take on and kind of like dissect it and see what if there is an abuse. I don't assume that there is. I don't assume just because it's happening at the national level that that's what's going to happen in the local level. I don't know enough about the issue. I haven't really pulled it apart to know what the best answer is there. I just wouldn't want it to end up like our national politics in Congress, where if you don't have $100,000 to put on the table, you have no access. I don't want to see local politics descend to that. So anyhow, legislative, I think, could chew on it a little. I'll send videos. I'll send information. I think it's probably the biggest issue nationally in the area of ethics and anti-corruption. Mm-hmm. So I think it'd be very interesting to see what all of you as a group thought of it and your thinking process on it.
I agree. Okay. Is it that time of year already to file the disclosure?
It's a little early.
I
like
thought it was
Kirby's
July.
On top of it.
I thought it was due in July.
It is due in July, but with the turn of a new calendar year comes a new financial disclosure form. So what we tried to do is get the Ethics Commission to be the beacon, so to speak, the standard bearer for the city, mm-hmm. and getting them filed and getting them filed early. So when I start following up with people in May and June, making sure it's done by July 1st, I can say, well, all the Ethics Commission has filed, and now I'm working on this board and commission or these people. So this is just a reminder that you need to file that financial disclosure statement, the Form 1 for 2017, prior calendar year, by July 1st
of 2018. You file it with the local Duval County Supervisor of Elections, and I'll send out an email with the form to you all.
Thank you.
Is there, if I could just ask on the last point, are you or anybody else in ODC sort of a, I know the Florida Bar doesn't like to use the word specialist, but somebody who focuses in election law or First Amendment law in that way?
That would be Jason Teal, Sandra Stockwell.
Okay.
I know that when there's an election, they are assigned to the Supervisor of Elections office, and they sit there on election day.
Yeah.
They are assigned to any election questions that come up. So Sandra Stockwell is our real estate attorney, and Jason Teal is the deputy over regulatory, and those are usually our election laws attorneys.
I was just thinking it may be helpful for the legislative committee to kind of brainstorm with somebody who knows about that law. It's great if we can all sort of sit here and say, this is what we'd like to do. But if we actually propose something and Jason Teal immediately says, absolutely not, here's the law, that's going to get struck down. And we all just wasted two meetings and hours of time. That may just be something worth, I guess it's up to Mary Bland Love to request.
I'll talk with her about it. There's some people, state of Florida, you know, Leslie Jean Barr from last year, was on the State Elections Commission. And so there's probably an attorney in Tallahassee that lives and breathes elections law like 100% of the time, whereas our guys in OGC,
they are just there
sporadic
during the election,
yeah,
on election day,
yeah,
usually,
yeah, yeah,
and then the days afterwards, they are the ones who are assigned, but they don't focus on it like an elections lawyer would do.
We can find someone in Tallahassee, maybe set up a phone conference, you know, just...
But they may know the elections attorney in Tallahassee,
yeah,
right.
So... Probably good to start.
That's a good point.
Start with Jason, you know, yeah, it wouldn't hurt to start with him.
And just for example, the issue that came to my mind, and I don't have a position on this one way or another, but just a thought, is that I think I remember there that there is some state restriction on candidate coordination with PACs, right?
Yeah.
And we as an ethics commission only have jurisdiction over city officials, right, appointed elected officials and employees. So it would be just interesting to kind of think through who are we actually going to require to file what? And so if you're talking about private contributions to a private corporation, which is a PAC, and then there's a state restriction on coordination between that PAC and the person over which we have jurisdiction, who do we actually direct to do what? And so by directing a city official to coordinate with their PAC, are we essentially forcing them to violate state elections law? But
yeah, that's true. And you can't do that, but you can also... say that any money that goes on their, that gets expended on their behalf, that there has to be a clear declaration of where that money came from, or they can't accept it. So you put the prohibition on them accepting the money unless they come up with certain transparency in the money. So some of that's been done up in Massachusetts. There's ways people have kind of worked with that, because you can't communicate. You can't direct your PAC to do anything.
Which presumably means you can't accept it either, right? So ostensibly the PAC is doing this without the candidate's endorsement. And so by requiring the candidate to disclose something about the PAC, you're actually requiring the communication that's prohibited.
And the way Elizabeth Warren got around that, which was interesting, is she had an agreement with her opponent that if any PAC money went into advertising, for instance, you can't call up the PAC and say, do this or don't do this, but if any money was expended in advertising, like let's say $50,000 on an ad, that they would voluntarily, between the two of them, reduce $50,000 of their own spending in their campaign money by whatever the PAC spent on them, which I thought was like a really interesting. So there's a lot of thinking in the area, but I still think that there's probably something we can do to provide transparency at the local level that would be interesting. I just don't know what that is yet.
Well, even if it wasn't an impermissible request to get that information from the PAC to disclose, I don't see how that solves anything if you've got multiple PACs coordinating with each other, because it's, hey, I'm an organization here and I want to donate money to this person, but I don't want them to know that that's the reason I'm doing it. So I'm going to give it to a PAC. Gives it to another PAC who says, well, we've got some really friendly ecological money here that we could go your way, and it has nothing to do with that project, and why don't you just earmark your money for this candidate, which won't be controversial. I don't know. It seems
there's probably a way, and sometimes it's with procurement, with the really large contracts. If someone wants to bid on a $50 million contract, you require, have you made any campaign contributions to any PAC or any, you know, and then you can start tracing the money that way. So it's a cat and mouse game is all I got to say, and it's cutting edge in how politics are going to be shaped and how ethics rules are going to be either useful or completely obliterated with this type of, if it is, like you saw the article on the mayor's travel. Like, I don't have to tell you about, because my PAC paid for the travel. I just, you know, I was, so, sorry, you know, that's off limits. So we're either going in that direction and we give in and say there's nothing we can do to curb that or to get more transparency, or we kind of figure out if there is something. And I just know that this group is, I feel it, that we'll analyze the heck out of it and we'll come up with something that will maybe push back a little bit. Right now it's the Wild West and it's a free-for-all for the people on the one side. I just think there should be a little pushback on the other side. Anyhow. We'll get in touch with Jason Teal.
I'd like to suggest, too, maybe Jason Teal might be a good idea, but rather than bringing or getting the person in Tallahassee on the phone, if lawyers are anything like academics, you do what you do for a living, but you've got other interests. And there are people here that know more about election law than we think, and that might be a place to start, you know, February meeting with the legislative committee. That'll help you kind of identify the parameters of what the possibilities are, and then maybe after that, getting the person in Tallahassee might just end up telling you some pretty obvious stuff that we should have figured out ourselves. Mm-hmm. So anyways, the point being, we're just kind of speculating now as what's going on, and so if we could take one or two steps along those lines to get a better idea of what is possible.
There's a lot of conjecture.
Yes.
I agree with that.
That's a good point.
Although, I'll echo your sentiment, Carla, that when the article came out about the mayor's travel, that's the first thing I thought of is we care about a $100 dinner, mm-hmm. and he's flying first class to all these different cities. And the question certainly was raised in my head, but I didn't have any idea of what we could do about it. So, that's the conjecture.
Well, since you mentioned that, you know, Carla, and the history of this commission, there was a lot of community outreach with people like John Noonan and the concerned taxpayers of Duhaw County. And that's the sort of thing where that citizens didn't say, hold on, you know, it might be legal regarding the letter of the law, but this is the old, you know, the laws of the moral minimum sort of thing. So, you know, it might be the sort of thing that might require a bit of community mobilization.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's at the beginning stages and some interesting research needs to be done, because it just can't be a throwaway thing. We either do and we do it right and we research it and we come up with a good solution that's helpful, or not bother with it at all. So I'll find good speakers or speaker, mm-hmm. or legislator.
Did you have some confidentiality procedures that we need to discuss?
Do we have the new form?
Because we talked about discussing it when everyone was here.
Yeah, I redid it and sent it out. Well, we have.
I was copying the other materials ready.
You didn't see it? Okay. We have a confidentiality form, and it's been redone. And what I'll do is I'll just email it to everybody, take mm-hmm. a look at it, and see if you want to add anything, if it reflects adequately. I just want to make sure that everybody is really, really tight with our shade materials, mm-hmm. which everybody is already, but I just want to reflect that. We always had, like, the beginning of every year, we'd have people sign a new confidentiality, like, I promise to not leave materials out. Mm-hmm. You know, I promise to lock everything up. You know, it's just a reminder of the security. So we have a new one. I'll send it out just in draft form, see if we've got any input on it. Some violations, then John, I'll get that input and then send it back.
As long as they send it back to you directly.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just send it to me if you've got any ideas. Like, gosh, you forgot to put Don't hand it to your spouse to read. Whatever you think we need to do to tighten up on this confidentiality statement, I'm welcoming any input on it.
Anything else on that point? Do you have any public comments?
Something else?
I was just going to say that at our last time we were together thinking about sunshine and confidentiality, I thought you said something really smart that I was thinking, but you said it better than I did, and the meeting ended, and I wanted to compliment you, but I was afraid because the meeting ended. I wasn't supposed to, so have a compliment.
Very good.
Yeah, good, Ellen.
So I shouldn't have complimented him after the meeting was over, right? That would be bad.
Well, you're not discussing, you're saying... did a great job. I don't know if that violates the sunshine.
I was too chicken.
No, that shows support. That shows support because the issue could be coming up at the next meeting and he knows that you support what he's doing.
Yeah,
so.
I would probably not do that.
Okay. Yeah. Don't ever compliment.
It could have led into more conversation, so.
Don't ever compliment the chair.
Okay. Well, he was just a regular Joe last time.
That's right.
Still on your board.
Just put it on the record. He did a great job.
I think we're ready for public comment.
All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak. You know, my name is John Newney, and my address is on the record. And, you know, if you really want to open up transparency, you know, all these meetings, can be streamed online from Lou and Robert's. Go to COJ.net. You know, it's just dumb luck that I'm here. I had no idea about this meeting. You know, and you know, if you want transparency, just send out emails. My email address is here. You know, and I've been coming for years. So you know, when you talk about transparency, I think it is going completely in the opposite. You know, let me just read some of my comments right here. Certain boards and commissions are, in my opinion, subverting the spirit of sunshine for their immediate direct personal gain. Should the public be allowed to see, and more importantly, participate in these super duper subcommittees? You know, when you have subcommittees with different commissions and boards, they're assigning people. And even the chair is saying, you know, from a councilman, well, this is how you get around sunshine. So you talk to him, don't talk to us, this, and you're like, wow. And now you go to the meetings, and here's the report, and all these reports, and you never see your reports. You know, and dozens of examples, dozens. You know, I feel like I just can't keep up with this stuff. Now there's a 6:30 CPAC meeting tonight, Saturday. You know, and I just happen to see it on the board out there. And get this. You know, the CPACs, it's like every time you're opening up another big can of worms that, you know, it's, I feel like I just can't keep up with this stuff. But I was at a meeting one time where, you know, the CPACs, I think you see the at-large people. I don't know how many CPACs there are. Maybe there's 5 CPACs. So you have 5 at-large council members. So at these CPACs, you know, from what I understand, this is going back months ago at a meeting, you know, where you think you're going to have more opportunity for training. You're not. And from my understanding is that the CPAC members, you know, in other words, you send the email to the CPAC people, okay? And then they'll disseminate, you know, who's going to see that email. And then it comes back just to the LR. So now you've taken out the 14 council members with the 14 district representation that you think you have, and you really don't have. You know what always got me started coming to city council? What does the CPAC? I went to a CPAC, and then I had an issue. And you know what? Got completely tubed in it. And the thing was, after that I realized, go to city council. You can't get ignored at city council. And so, you know, you just hope that public comment will never, ever be taken away. Because the freedom of speech, or at least the ability to share a thought, a concern, or an idea, is really eroding fast. And so, go to these board subcommittee meetings. And you know what? And every day on the fourth floor, there's a new agenda that's drawn up with noticed meetings. But that's something different that the general public just, you don't know about if you go to the COJ website. I mean, there are real, true inconsistencies, you know, to keep the public misinformed on this stuff. and I'm not making it up. It's really tough, to go to these subcommittee meetings. So anyway, that's my biggest concern because, you see who's on these subcommittee meetings, and here's this eco project, here's this project, here's this project, and it's like, cha-ching, sign me up. Just appoint me somewhere. It's tough. And you're at this. So it's like, it's got to start here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
Absolutely. Subcommittee meetings are a notice, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They're noticed.
Do we have any other announcements for the House Committee members? Anything else before we adjourn? We will adjourn.
Thank you.
I'm just going to make a comment about
your well, stop before.
On a scale of